As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, and this week is a big week for the college football staff at The Athletic. We have started our State of the Program series. That's right, we will give you the state of every single program in the FBS. That is 1 through 130. And we started off this week with a really, really interesting one. I think maybe the most fascinating situation in college football, and that is Michigan. And Austin Meek is our Michigan beat writer. And he wrote the State of the Program story. The headline on this story, Austin, is pretty much perfect. I mean, it pretty much describes what we're talking about with Michigan's season. Jim Harbaugh's second act or his last stand? I mean, let's back up. How weird was it? How surprised were you when it finally comes out? Jim Harbaugh is staying, but he is taking a massive pay cut to do this incentive-laden deal with a really low buyout, as opposed to just a standard new deal, or they fired him and moved on to somebody else.
I don't think there's any other coach, maybe any other athletic director in the country who could have come together on a contract like the one Ward Manuel negotiated for Jim Harbaugh. It's just, you know, he is a totally unique person, as anybody who's been around college football or the NFL knows about Jim Harbaugh. And it's a totally unique situation for him at Michigan for a lot of reasons, you know, a lot of factors, including just, you know, the fact that he played here and people still love him, you know, in a way, even though his tenure has been really frustrating for a lot of people. So, I mean, it's totally unusual, maybe even unprecedented, to see a coach at this stage of his career who's accomplished what Jim Harbaugh has accomplished in football sign a contract that guarantees him so little. I mean, he is totally coaching for his life at every step of this contract. It's a five-year deal, but the buyout for Michigan is so low that at any point they can pull the escape hatch and make a change. So, you know, Jim Harbaugh is betting on himself. That's the only way I could look at it. There's no guarantees for him. There's no safety net. He's got to win with this deal, and he's got to win fast.
Well, and the math of it's really interesting because, so he had 1 year left on his old deal, which would have paid him $8 million. He does this new deal. He's going to get $4 million. And if they fire him, they owe him $4 million. So if they end up firing him, they're going to pay him the same amount they would have paid him anyway for that last year of the contract. Only now they've got some continuity. And now my question is, did the contract situation, the fact that he obviously realized he had very little leverage, the fact that he realized he's very close to possibly the end, was that the motivation for the staff revamp where they get much younger? Obviously, the Don Brown out as defensive coordinator is the headline of that. But across the board, they got younger on the staff.
I think it was understood that if Jim Harbaugh came back, there would have to be massive changes throughout the rest of the program. And that's what they've done. I mean, really, they have changed pretty much everything you can change about a program aside from the head coach and I guess the offensive coordinator with Josh Gattis coming back, but pretty much everything else, you know, the rest of the staff, the defensive staff, defensive coordinator, they've changed their recruiting department. They really have gone back to square one in a way and tried to change all of these pieces around Jim Harbaugh with the hope that, you know, you still have the right head coach. And if you just get the right people around him, that you can get this thing turned around. Now, you know, we can look back and, you know, maybe there's some precedent for that to work. There have been guys who have done that. There have been a lot of guys who have tried that. Yeah, Notre Dame. That's the one you look at. Yeah, Notre Dame. Brian Kelly went 4-8, you know, revamped his staff, and they're in the CFP picture. That's what Michigan is hoping is going to happen. There's a lot more examples on the other side of head coaches who were in desperation mode and brought in a bunch of new coaches around them. You know, my question with Michigan has been, can you change as much as they've tried to change in one off season and expect that it's going to come together and you're going to see results from it right away? Because that's the expectation of Michigan fans. A lot of them anyway, they're not on board for like, this is a 2 or 3 year rebuild after 6 years with Jim Harbaugh. Yeah,
and this is one more shot.
Right. Yeah. They want to see it right away.
Well, and the thing about it that's interesting to me is because like Ari Wasserman and I talk a lot about identity with programs and like Wisconsin is sort of the gold standard for knowing what you are as a program. But obviously Ohio State does, Alabama does, you know, Clemson does, Oklahoma does, you know, Michigan, it doesn't seem to know what it is schematically. You know, I'm just not sure. Like if you told me to describe Michigan's offense, Michigan's defense, and the sort of general attitude around the Michigan football program, I don't think I could. And that's what I worry about with this one is it Harbaugh has figured out what he needs to do and is doing it, or is he still just kind of searching, well, maybe this will work. Well, maybe this will work.
Yeah. Yeah. In reporting my state of the program, I was talking to a coach who was like, you know, just look at the amount of turnover that Jim Harbaugh has had on his staff. And how can you have an identity as a program when you're swapping out half your staff every year? And, you know, maybe if you're Alabama, you can do that because the guy at the top has such an overarching vision that comes down to everybody that you can, you know, you can switch out half your staff and it's still Nick Saban's program. And I've just never sensed that Michigan has that with Jim Harbaugh. You know, he's got his, you know, his pluses and minuses as a coach and things he does well and maybe things he doesn't do as well. He's never seemed to me as, you know, the Nick Saban type figure in a program who has this clearly defined vision that he's going to impart to everybody in his organization. It's more like he's going to do what he does and he's going to bring in other people to do what they do. But somehow there's got to be something that ties it all together, because if you're just changing things every off season, you know, changing philosophies based on, I'm going to bring in this guy who does this and I'm going to bring in this guy who does this, somebody's got to be the one to put all the pieces together and actually make it look like a coherent program. And I don't really get the sense that that is Jim Harbaugh's strength as a head coach.
Yeah. You go back to your fan survey and it was interesting to see how many people were more optimistic about this season than they were last season. It's a low number. So you asked, compared to this time last year, I am blank about the future of Michigan football. Less optimistic, 52.7%. That sounds about right. But neither more or less optimistic, 26.4%. The ennui group is pretty big there. And then more optimistic, 20.9%. So basically 4 out of 5 Michigan fans feel like either this is going to be way worse or I don't even care anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I guess you would expect that in a way, because I think before this season, I think the idea about Jim Harbaugh that a lot of people believed is like, okay, hey, maybe he's not going to win us championships. Maybe he's not going to beat Ohio State. Maybe he's not going to get us in the playoff. But at least we know, like, the floor with Jim Harbaugh is his teams are going to win like 8 or 9 games every year. And that was kind of, I think, the overriding belief among a lot of Michigan fans.
That's the hope. But last year kind of makes you wonder about that.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they have a season where they go 2-4. And if they had played a full season, they would have been, that was a 4 or 5, maybe a 6 win team. Like, that wasn't a fluke that they went 2-4. They weren't a good team last year. And I think you see that, and then you say, okay, like, this, you know, this could be worse than we realized. Like, the floor with Jim Harbaugh is lower than we realized it could be. And so I think that's where you see, you know, those, you know, whatever it is, 80% of fans who are not feeling very optimistic, because, you know, they're seeing where the program is coming out of the 2020 season. And they're like, you know, there's no guarantees here. Like, there's no guarantee that we're just going to snap back to winning 9 or 10 games after what we saw on the field last year.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm curious as to what Michigan fans really want, because I think they're pretty realistic about the relationship between Michigan and Ohio State. Obviously, they would like to win games in that rivalry, but they understand where Ohio State is at a program, and it's a historically good point for a program that's always been historically good. So
right.
It's understandable that you're not going to win every one of those. It's probably understandable you're not going to win half of those. But do they feel, is that still a requirement? Like, at some point you got to beat Ohio State, or is that becoming something that they almost have given up on?
Yeah, I think after the losses to Ohio State in 2018 and 2019, I think that kind of broke the spirit of a lot of Michigan fans. A lot of Michigan fans who before that point would have said, like, hey, we're going to win one of these. Like, we just need it to bounce our way. Jim Harbaugh is going to get this done. And after, you know, after those two losses, I think a lot of them are like, yeah, okay, we gotta recalibrate our expectations here, because as long as Ohio State is operating at the level that it's at, you know, we can't reasonably expect that we're even close in this rivalry. That was a hard thing for a lot of people to accept, but I think a lot of people did kind of, you know, coming out of 2019, get to the point of saying, look, we would love to beat Ohio State, and that's still something that, you know, we expect Jim Harbaugh to do at some point. But at this point in time, if we're like the solid, you know, number two program in the Big Ten East, like, we can live with that. What we've seen since then is they're not that either. Like, Michigan right now is
right,
a middle of the pack program in the Big Ten East. And I don't think anybody, like, the common denominator with all of Michigan fans is they're not good with that. You know, maybe you don't have to be number one right now, but you got to be better than Michigan State. You got to be, you know, at least on the same level as Indiana. Like, when you're dropping below those schools, then it's like, okay, we got a problem.
Well, and I feel like playing Wisconsin every year also is a tough measuring stick, because that's a consistent program that I would say that they are probably consistently second best in the Big Ten. And so to be judged against those two constantly. Now, look, you're Michigan. You're supposed to be really good, and you're supposed to hold a high standard. But I think that's also been tough. But so can they get it back, though? Can they get that excitement back? Because, I mean, you look at the schedule, the Washington game is going to be tough. But let's say they win that one. Let's say they beat Western Michigan, they beat Washington, they beat Northern Illinois, and they beat Rutgers, and they're 4-0 going into the Wisconsin game. Is this fan base starting to get excited again? Are they starting to say, all right, maybe this is going to work. Maybe this retooled coaching staff is going to get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing about that I've found in the time I've been here with Michigan fans is, like, you know, as grumpy as they can be at times, like, they come back really fast. And yes, if Michigan starts 4-0, if some of the young players are out there looking good, if the recruiting is continuing to be on the upswing, absolutely, they're gonna jump on board with it, and you know they're gonna be all in again. But talking about the schedule, like the real test is what happens in the back half of it, because you look at that November.
Yeah, I wasn't going to talk about that part.
As quick as they would jump on, they would jump off again if that November schedule goes bad, because there's not a lot of easy wins on the back half of that schedule.
Yeah, and I feel like Michigan State is really important this year, because the loss last year was interesting. The situation Mel Tucker jumped into was not great, but you look at the games they won. They beat Michigan, they beat Northwestern. Like, this guy can get you up for a big game. And if I'm Michigan, I don't like that, because Michigan's always going to be a big game for Michigan State. And that's one sort of in that string of, you know, Nebraska's probably a winnable game, but then they got to play Northwestern, then they have Michigan State, then Indiana, then Penn State. You lose that Michigan State game in that stretch, things get real ugly.
Yeah, the Michigan State game was the one last year that Michigan absolutely could not lose. Like any of the other losses last year, I think, you know, in isolation, you can kind of explain them away or understand them. The Michigan State loss was just inexplicable. I mean, we had seen the talent gap between Michigan and Michigan State at the end of Mark D'Antonio's tenure. Michigan was just a way better program. I mean, clearly ahead of Michigan State. Mel Tucker comes in, doesn't get a spring, like still figuring out what he's got on his roster. It's the second game of the year. They just lost to Rutgers, and they come into Michigan Stadium and throw the ball all over Don Brown's defense. Like that was the game, you know, really, that it was just totally inexplicable last year. And, you know, one of the things that you say in defense of Jim Harbaugh, you know, even though he hasn't won the East, hasn't beaten Ohio State, he had gotten the program to a point where they were regularly beating Mark D'Antonio and Michigan State after struggling with them early in Jim Harbaugh's tenure. So you could say, if you're looking for hope, like, well, hey, at least, you know, at least we're ahead of Michigan State. You lose to them in Mel Tucker's first year, you can't even say that anymore. So yeah, that if there's one absolute must win for Michigan on this year's schedule, it's that game.
Yeah. That may be the referendum game for Harbaugh this time. It was the one for Don Brown last year. It may be for Harbaugh this year. And especially if Mel Tucker is building something, because we don't really know about Mel Tucker as a head coach yet, because he had the 1 year at Colorado. And so we don't know how good he is as a builder, but if he's as good a recruiter as he was as an assistant at some SEC schools, there's a real good chance they could have a pretty talented roster up there in East Lansing. So that is one that Michigan needs to stay on the right side of that rivalry. But yeah, you know, and then the question is how. So we know the defense is getting retooled. The quarterback situation is interesting to me. Cade McNamara, I know the QB's coach kind of said Cade McNamara is the starter. They've got Alan Bowman coming in from Texas Tech. JJ McCarthy is the true freshman that everybody's very excited about. It's interesting because I remember when Bowman was a freshman at Texas Tech, Cliff Kingsbury was still there. He was really excited because he said he's maybe the smartest quarterback he'd ever coached. And Bowman's career has just been kind of derailed by injuries. But, you know, I wonder if he's healthy, can he push when he gets there?
I think he can push. My sense is that, you know, Bowman is – it's not like they went out and said, hey, we need to find somebody to be our guy because we don't have a guy.
Right.
I don't think that was the situation with Bowman. I think it was more like, you know, we don't have an established starting quarterback. We've got a couple young guys. And so let's bring in a veteran guy. If he plays great, if he doesn't play, he's still, you know, a good guy to have in your quarterback room. So, you know, I don't think Bowman is like plan A. I think if he starts, he's probably like plan B or maybe even plan C.
Right.
But I think, you know, you like to have a guy like that just for his experience. And, you know, having a guy like that, if you need him, is a great asset. But I think probably as it stands right now, you know, Cade McNamara has a pretty good hold on the job. He needs to sustain that over the summer and through the preseason. But the going into the season, I think it's kind of Cade's job to lose, I think. Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like when he came in last year for Joe Milton, that the offense did run smoother and just looked more fluid. And it does seem like they've finally kind of gotten what they want to be under Josh Gattis, which I think is a plus, because that's kind of the one guy who wasn't purged. And I felt like kind of halfway through his first season, they started to understand.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they know what they're doing in that offense. It's just a matter of, are they going to be good enough? Do they have the talent when they're playing a Wisconsin, a Northwestern, and, you know, a Michigan State to win the games?
Yeah, I thought when Cade took over last year, I thought the offense started to look a little more like the offense looked in the second half of Gattis's first season when Shea Patterson kind of got in a groove and they started to really play well. You know, and then when Joe Milton took over, like, stylistically, Joe was just such a different quarterback than Shea. He had totally, totally different skill set, totally different strengths. And so, it was just a huge change. And the offense, I don't think, ever really meshed with what Joe did well.
Shea's more of a playground quarterback and Joe's more of a pure drop back, kind of old school, drop back QB.
Yeah, he's like a bomber. Like, he just throws it deep and, you know, sometimes on target, sometimes not. And so, yeah, it was more of like a conventional drop back offense with Joe, with, you know, some like power quarterback runs mixed in because he was a big guy. And it never seemed like it all clicked. And even though, you know, Kay doesn't have Joe Milton's physical tools, you know, he's not 6'5". He can't throw it 70 yards from his knees. Like, that's not the quarterback he is. But he showed when he was out there last year that he is he's a facilitator. He gets the ball out on time. You know, he finds the open guy. He lets his receivers make plays. And we did see the offense look a little more fluid after he took over. And I think that's probably what has given him the edge, going into the offseason.
So I guess the big question, though, and probably the one that everybody asks you, is what is Mike McDonald doing with the defense? This is a 33-year-old wunderkind, was with the Baltimore Ravens, obviously with Jim Harbaugh's brother, John. You know, what is he going to do that is going to be so different from what Don Brown was doing? And I would imagine it's going to be quite a bit different from what Don Brown was doing.
Yeah, they've definitely been pretty good this spring at keeping the specifics under wraps of what Mike McDonald is going to do. But if you look back at the defense he was in Baltimore, he came up at Georgia as a GA with Todd Grantham. So you can look at the Georgia defense and what they do at Florida and find some similarities. I mean, like, I would expect them to be a base 3-4 defense. You know, a guy like Aiden Hutchinson, who had his hand on the ground most of the time in Don Brown's defense, is probably going to be standing up on the edge. They're going to try to move him around and use him in a lot of different ways. Defense.
If he learned a lot from Todd Grantham, it's where's the fourth rusher coming from? That is Todd Grantham's. Well, don't ask a Florida fan thinks Todd Grantham's motto is, I'm going to blitz 7 every single time. But that's not really what he does. But yes, His kind of MO is move that fourth rusher around, make the quarterback guess. And that's the ethos of that Baltimore defense too. I've been doing some Jacksonville Jaguar stuff, and Joe Cullen is their new DC, and he came from Baltimore as well.
Yeah.
And it's very similar. Now Aiden Hutchinson is a good, will work well in that. Michigan doesn't really have the body types for the defensive ends yet, but I'm looking at it through the wrong prism because I'm looking at what the Jags just signed. So I'm looking at it through NFL players, but they want like 6'5", 300-pound defensive ends in that 3-4. And so it's not as easy to do that in college.
Yeah. Yeah. And that Michigan's roster is not really constructed for that because, you know, one of the knocks on Don Brown is that the interior of the defensive line, you know, they just didn't have the size. You know, they would take a guy who's like 250 pounds in high school and say, okay, we're going to put 30 pounds on this guy and play him at defensive tackle. And like, that's hard to do in the Big Ten. So they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to recruit some size on the defensive line for this to work. And, you know, the MO with Don Brown, I mean, everybody knew what Don Brown wanted to do. He wanted to bring pressure, and he was going to put his corners in a lot of man coverage, and he wanted his corners to make a play on the ball, and he wanted the quarterback to get hit every time. And that was his defense. And unfortunately, it all kind of starts to unravel because your corners can't hang with receivers in man coverage. You can't get to the quarterback. You know, your two best pass rushers get hurt last year. You can't get to the quarterback. You're sending pressure. You're still not getting to the quarterback who's, you know, just getting the ball out, you know, throwing fades when you don't have time to get to the quarterback, and your corners can't cover, and the whole thing just kind of unraveled. So they just have to kind of tear it down, start from scratch, and try to, you know, to build it back up again.
Yeah. And that's, and that's, but the thing is, they'll have some fun with that. That's part of the fun, is finding those guys and seeing, you know, where they might have been used better. Because the thing about Don Brown, as good as he was very set in his ways. You know, he wanted, like you said, he wanted to play man. You know, he did mix in some zone later on. It kind of had to after the 2018 Ohio State game. There really wasn't wasn't a choice after that. But
yeah,
it was mostly against his will. So having somebody come in who this is going to be their thing, this is going to be what they want to do, I think it'll be interesting. And it'll be good, because if they're more talent, you know, the Washington game will be very telling for us, because that's one where the talent should be fairly equal, and we should get a good look at what they are.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing that, if you're looking for something to be encouraged about with Michigan's defense, you know, they have some pretty talented players. You know, their last couple recruiting classes, they signed quite a few guys on defense who were like, you know, four-star recruits, top 200, top 300 type players who just never really, you know, either because of the timing or whatever, like it never really clicked in Don Brown's defense. But it's not like, you know, the cupboard is completely bare. They do have some guys on defense. And they've got some guys who have played a lot. I mean, Dax Hill is, you know, five-star player, top 20 player in his class. Right. Like going into his third year, like he should be a really, really good player for Michigan if they can put it all together for him. So it's not like they're completely barren on defense, but it's, you know, it's just such a big schematic change and philosophical change. And they're trying to teach so much that you just wonder, like, how quickly will they be able to put all these pieces together?
Well, at least they have spring practice this year. This would have been a little bit tougher last year. So I mean, that's the part that's amazing to me is, you know, a lot of these programs did this all kind of on Zoom last year. You know, that would be hard. This time, at least the coaches get to work with the players and understand, you know, that's what amazes me about that Mel Tucker's team won any games last year way they came in. So yeah, so where do you think Michigan fits into the Big Ten right now?
I've got Michigan right in the middle of the East. Certainly wouldn't pick Michigan ahead of Ohio State, wouldn't pick Michigan ahead of Indiana, wouldn't pick Michigan ahead of Penn State, although I would think about it. I feel like those two programs are not too far apart. I still think Michigan is a step ahead of, you know, the Maryland's and Rutgers and Michigan States of the world, but I don't think it's a big gap either. Like, it's not like, you know, the division was when Jim Harbaugh started, where you could like count on two easy wins against Maryland and Rutgers. You know, both of those teams are capable of beating Michigan on the right day. So
when Rutgers pushed them to the absolute edge last year.
Yeah, triple overtime. I mean, Michigan was down, I think, 17 early in that game, and that was when Cade McNamara came in and really kind of seized the quarterback job in that comeback. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that there is any Big Ten team that I would look at right now and say, well, you know, Michigan is, you know, that's an easy win for Michigan. But I think talent wise, I still think, you know, Michigan is, I think, as talented as pretty much any team in the Big Ten, aside from Ohio State. I mean, you know, Penn State may overall be more talented. You can make a case for a couple teams, but you know, I think the talent is still there for Michigan to be solid, but I also have not, you know, seen the track record that Jim Harbaugh can get the most out of the talent that he's got on his roster.
Yeah, that's the part that's interesting to me is, and I think we talked about this earlier in the show, because there's been so much turnover, and not just on the on-field staff, but the off-field staff, and, mm-hmm. and there was just another shakeup with the recruiting department just mm-hmm. this past week, you know, there hasn't necessarily been a coherent recruiting philosophy, yeah. which I think is one of the issues that they've got to deal with. And the thing is, that's not something that gets solved in one off season, because you can't go back and re-recruit. You have the right. transfer portal, but you can't really use that either to do it the way you want to. So these new coaches coming in do not have the benefit of the players they recruited to do what they do. They're just going to have to make do with what they have.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing about Michigan's recruiting, because I think it's really interesting. Like this time last year, there was a pretty widespread belief, like when I did that survey last year, that, well, Michigan's problem is that they just haven't recruited well enough. They're not, you know, mm-hmm. they're not recruiting at Ohio State's level. They're letting too many in-state kids get away. Like if Jim Harbaugh wants to fix this, he's got to recruit better. And I think that that is totally part of Michigan's problem. They have had too many in-state kids get away. It has been just kind of weirdly hit and miss where, you know, they'll pull a guy like Dax Hill out of Oklahoma, who's a five-star prospect that had Alabama and everybody after him. But then they'll also, you know, just randomly miss on a guy from half an hour down the road who goes to another Big Ten school and is a really good player. And that was the kind of stuff like you just right. couldn't figure out why. So they do need to recruit better.
Ari Wasserman always asks about the Massachusetts pipeline. He doesn't understand why there was a Massachusetts pipeline.
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of like a coordinated recruiting strategy, is it your best strategy to just tell Don Brown to like, yeah, go back to, you know, New England in the off season and talk right. to all your buddies out there and find some kids? Like, is that the best? I mean, it worked out for him. Your Quiddy Pay was a 3-star kid.
From I was going to say that every time Ari brings it up, I'm like, Quiddy Pay is from New England, dude. Yeah.
But you know, you get, so. You know, so there's in spots that can work, but it can't be like your whole thing. Right. And so they do need to get a more coordinated approach in recruiting. But I also think, you know, two things, it's the recruiting and it's also like the retention and the development. Because if you sign a top 10 class and then a couple of years later, you know, 30% of that class is transferred, then you're not really, you know, you don't really have that top 10 talent on your roster anymore.
Right. You're not, and you're never getting that whatever made that person a 4-star. Like that, yeah, that's right. never translating to the field. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not seeing the benefit.
Like Donovan Edwards is the perfect example of what they should be doing, right? There's a very good in-state player. They got him. He's there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in this class, Donovan Edwards and JJ McCarthy, I mean, those two guys were the cornerstone of their 21 class. And that's, you know, for 22, they've got Will Johnson, 5-star cornerback from the Detroit area, whose dad played at Michigan. Like those are the guys who have to come to Michigan. And I think, you know, to Jim Harbaugh's credit.
But like Raheem Anderson, the center from mm-hmm. Cass Tech. That seems like a guy who has to come to Michigan kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what Jim Harbaugh realized with his staff is he needed to get a staff who was going to get the guys who have to come to Michigan. And they did that. You know, they hired Ron Bellamy, who was Donovan Edwards' high school coach, played at Michigan, really respected all around the state of Michigan. Like you can say, you know, high school coach, like he's never coached in college, a little bit of a gamble there. But if you have to recruit Michigan better, that's one way to do it. And they did.
Well, I mean, they did it. They hired a New Jersey high school coach mm-hmm. and you could say it was to get a player and they got several players out of it, but mm-hmm. That's part of what you got to do. That's just, that's part of the game at this point.
Yeah. And I think the thing is like, if you're building, you know, your program with guys from the state of Michigan, like if you're getting those guys who maybe would have gone to Penn State, you know, would have left the Detroit area, they go to Penn State or go to Wisconsin or whatever, like, you know, there's no guarantees, but you know, if you've got a guy who, you know, it's 2 years into his career, he hasn't played much. He's kind of on the fence. Like, do I transfer? Do I stick around? You know, if he's a guy from New England or if he's a guy from California, it's probably a little bit harder to make that pitch of like, hey, stick it out. We have a future for you here versus if he's a guy from Detroit and he's close to home and his parents are here.
Right.
And that's
your mom is 30 minutes away. Like,
yeah,
go ask her. See what she says. Oh, she wants you to stay. Great.
Right. Yeah. So that's part of like the recruiting plan is not just like the guys you sign. It's also signing guys who, you know, will stay in your program and who, you know, will fit your program long term. And I think that's another thing that they need to do better.
Well, so another big picture question, because this is the part, I guess, where the rubber meets the road, where you're talking about where you had him in the Big Ten and kind of in the middle. Is that good enough? Like, let's say they go 8-4 this year and they lose to Ohio State and they lose to Penn State and they lose to Wisconsin and they lose to Northwestern.
Yeah.
Is Jim Harbaugh back?
You know, the thing that I have said throughout the offseason is it's not necessarily a number. It's going to be how it looks. So
it's going to be a feel.
Yeah. If they're 8-4 and they look really good in the 8 they win and they're right there in the 4 that they lose, then I'm going to say, yeah, Jim Harbaugh's back. If they're 8-4 and they get the doors blown off by 4 teams, and they, you know, the 8 wins are not super impressive, I'd maybe go the other way. So I think that there's some leeway there where it doesn't have to be like, okay, Jim, 10 wins or bust, Rose Bowl or bust. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that's what it is. But I do think that there needs to be like some measurable progress. And I think that it does need to show up in wins. Like, I don't think it's going to be a deal where if they go 5-7, somebody's going to say, oh, well, hey, you know, we only lost to Ohio State by 20, you know, progress. Like, it's not that. Like, they have to win games, but I think that there's some leeway in there.
Yeah, you can't be that at Michigan. You can't be an only loss to type program. That's just that's not how they're going to roll historically now. So, but Austin Meek, this is fascinating. I cannot wait to see how this unfolds because, let's be honest, this is not something most programs would have done. And I am very intrigued to see how it works out.
Yeah, man, it's going to be interesting. If maybe it's the second act or maybe it's the last stand, but either way, it's going to be a pretty fascinating year to see how all of that plays out.
He's Austin Meek. He covers Michigan for The Athletic. His State of the Program is available on The Athletic right now, and you can read all about the Michigan Wolverines. You can read his Michigan fan survey. You can read about the shakeup in the Michigan recruiting department. You can read about everything else Big Ten, everything else college football on The Athletic. And thank you so much for listening.